bit. Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Hey, Michael, I did mention you're a comedian and broadcaster and actor and a number of other things, but author, and I don't know many people know that you've now on your fourth or fifth
book. Sixth. This is my sixth book, yeah.
And predominantly focused on World War II and...
I've done three books previously. I've always had this obsession slash interest with the stories of the air war, of the Second World War. I just started off as a kid making model aeroplanes, and that sort of grew into... Well, it grew into a few years ago when a friend of mine was writing the biography of Bud Tingwall, the late great Bud. And Bud was a pilot. Bud had an amazing war as a Spitfire pilot. And I went and explained to the fellow who was doing the biography a bit of the technical stuff about what he was talking about, but my friend couldn't understand. I thought I should do my own book. So that was the first one. So tracking down old fellas that had never told their war stories before, and I did three books on that, and this is a different one.
That's what you're interested in, isn't it, Michael? The stories that haven't been told so
yes,
far?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And
there are a lot of them, aren't there? Because this book, as going through it, this is sort of predominantly set over Port Moresby.
This is a different... This new book, 44 Days, is about... the very beginning, actually the very, very first engagement that we had in the air with the Japanese at the beginning of the Pacific War in March 1942, when Port Moresby was being softened up for invasion by the Japanese, and they were bombing it by air from bases that they'd occupied on the north coast of New Guinea, and we had nothing to defend it, absolutely nothing to defend it, except this one squadron thrown together at the last minute. It's called 75 Squadron of raw pilots, and for 6 weeks
and
they
mostly
kind of
kids.
Held them up. All kids, all kids, almost all of which had not even fired their guns, not even in anger, but even for practice, because there wasn't enough ammunition.
Do you know the scary thing for me, Michael? I've looked inside the cockpit of some of those World War II aircraft. It's terrifyingly rudimentary.
These
were remarkably brave people to even get in these crates.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, and we only got the airplanes that we used in this engagement were American Kitty Hawks, which we only lucked onto because a whole shipload of them in crates was bound for the Dutch in Borneo, and Borneo fell in about 2.5 minutes. So it diverted onto Botany Bay, and John Curtin, the Prime Minister, said, "Thanks very much, President Roosevelt. We'll have them send us the bill," and that became the basis of three new squadrons, the first of which was thrown into this moor of New Guinea for this six-week period.
Yeah. We saw some of those Americans, because I'm still chairman of the Royal Melbourne Hospital.
Okay.
And when it was first opened in 1942, the Americans commandeered...
Don't tell me you were there, Robert.
I wasn't there. No, Peter, no. Thank you for that. It's great. Aging Dolly now. That's wonderful. It's actually Dolly for the cloned sheep, isn't it? Not for other... Anyway. But the Royal Melbourne was given over because it was the hospital, because that's where the theatre of war was. People don't realise... That was the hospital for all of the northern battles. That's how close they got to Australia.
Yes.
So it's a remarkable story. Later, as the Pacific battle moved further north, we moved the hospital further north as well, because it was further away from Australia's shores. But
these guys were
holding the line in these things. If you think about the rudimentary nature of cars in the 1950s and how rough and ready they were, well, now think planes of a decade earlier. You know, remarkably brave people.
Now, we didn't get much of a chance to talk in the first hour because Robert wouldn't shut up.
He doesn't, does he?
About your book.
Oh, yeah, about my book.
So how long does it take you to write a book?
A good couple of years to write a book like this. But, you know, that's not going hammer and tongs.
Do you have a research assistant or some sort of minion that helps you get the books from the library to
research? My next book, no. Peter Fitzsimon. This was a... Peter Fitzsimons has a staff of thousands.
He does.
Of course, because his books sell millions of copies. No, this was just... this is a strange... How this one came about is an interesting story, because I was actually giving a talk down at Rosebud. And in Rosebud RSL, in fact, about a previous book I'd
done. Still living the high life, aren't you?
I am, right?
Following your days of the bright lights of television to the Rosebud RSL.
Number 23, come and get your mixed grill.
Chicken Kiev's ready.
I'm trying to speak here. This is very important. But after the... I was giving a talk about a book I'd previously written, talking to old Air Force buggers who revealed their stories to me. And afterwards... a middle-aged fella called Peter came up to me. Hang on.
No, I wasn't there, no.
Different one.
I don't know where Rosebud is.
Oh, you see, we probably have lots of listeners in Rosebud.
I'm from the country.
And you're just dissing.
I'm a country boy. If it goes, if I've got to go past Chadston, it's either Frankston or it's, what did somebody say the other day that I recognised? Chadston I don't know, something else down
the
there.
City Square. Did you recognise that one?
If I've got to go past Chadston, it's either Frankston or there's something that's on the east that's not on the water. The Yarra Valley.
Yarra Valley. That's where I'm from.
I know.
I'm from the Yarra Valley. I was giving a talk and this fellow called Pete came up and he said, have you ever thought of doing a book about the 44 days? And I went, huh? And he reminded me of this story of this 6-week period where Australia really stood alone with one squadron of very raw fighter pilots thrown into the last minute to defend this thing. And he said, I'm the son of one of the original pilots. And it deserves to be written about. And I said, look, I agree, but we exchanged numbers, but I passed on it because I thought I was trying to get another book up with another publisher and was having trouble. 6 months later, I get taken to lunch by a fella from Hachette, which is a terrific publisher up in they've just been handing a little minor publication called Harry Potter.
Oh yes. Is this the new stage? Yeah. The adaptation of the script from the stage that's now in a book or two.
Yes, it will release simultaneously all around the world. That means we print our lot here in Australia and all over the world, and at the same time, the West End play of the new Harry Potter story was being shown for the first time. Incredible logistics, ridiculous.
Are you a Potter fan?
I read the first few and I admired them greatly. Mm. I didn't. I kind of drifted off. But I do like the genre. Mm. I do like the genre. Garth Nix. Now, he's an Australian writer that writes wonderful young fantasy, young adult fantasy, really, and a lot dark and interesting and kind of weird. Brilliant writer.
I don't think it's young adult. I actually know a lot of adults that got into
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Yes, yeah.
And you know, recently
it started as a kids thing, but it went through all.
We just won the Quidditch Cup. The Australian team beat Germany in the Quidditch Cup.
Right.
I see. Okay. I kid you not. It was on the news. Including our own ABC News. They had somebody in who is the captain of the team or the coach of the team, and they just travelled to the other side of the world to play in the Quidditch Cup. And rather than being on brooms, they run around with a broomstick between their legs.
Right.
As they, it's the funniest thing to watch. I would just Google it, adults playing Quidditch. So they have a seeker which hangs in a sock hanging at the back of a man's trouser. And with a tennis ball or something in it, and watching people try and do a bit of a reach around to try and get hold of the seeker, which is really a tennis ball in a sock hanging out of the back of the man's trouser. Absolutely hysterical. You can fill in minutes of your life watching adults play Quidditch. I do recommend it.
I wonder if J.K. Rowling ever thinks back to the time where she had to go to a cafe because she couldn't afford the heating bill to write some of the first... story and the big publishers. Yeah, someone who would lead to lunatics in Germany and Australia
playing the Quidditch
playing game. An imaginary game.
And they beat the Americans, who are apparently the favourite.
Well, that's always good.
Yes,
to beat the Americans in anything, that's always good. So, was this my story?
Yes, it was. Sorry, I hate to interrupt.
All right, so then the. Right, so some fella had asked me to do this story, who's the son of one of the original pilots. I said no. 6 months later, I get asked exactly the same question by the publisher. And I thought, hang on, have you been in league with this guy? And he said, no, it was just coincidental. And then I rang this other fella back and said, hey, do you remember me from 6 months ago where we met? You mentioned you had a bit of source material from your father and his mates. And he said, yeah, I'll post it up to you. So a few days later, I was expecting an envelope, and I get this, one of these postcards saying, please come and collect your box. And there was this trunk full of diaries and pictures and cassette tape recordings of conversations that it had. Because this is an episode of our military history that was just hasn't even been forgotten about. It's never been known.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were Americans, Peter, it would be on the stamps.
Of course
it would be on the coins, and we'd be crying about it. But because
we'd be having some sort of inauguration day every year.
That's right. But it was a real David and Goliath struggle with these young, inexperienced men in planes that they'd only just come to grips with, against, for 6 weeks, the absolute cream of the yet undefeated Japanese.
Have you discovered in writing this, because this is not the first book in this genre that you've written, have you discovered there are more stories that we probably should know about that
endless,
we're just not hearing?
Endless.
I imagine there's countless stories.
The whole Kokoda business, the whole, you know, the fight along the Kokoda track was virtually an unknown story until, I mean, some people knew about it, but the general public didn't until really the 80s when, people like Keating. Who actually came out and said, oh, well, you know, it's all very well with the sort of Singapore and the Brits and all that, but what about the Kokoda business and we're standing alone and all that? And
I don't want to make any assumptions, but I'm going to. Is it because of the fact that Papua New Guinea is sort of kind of so close and it's sort of kind of not... It's not Singapore. It doesn't have this huge international presence. So it's
I think it just goes back to our tall poppy syndrome, which has completely dogged us from the word go, and it continues to. And it was, it just concerns us. Even though it was a threat, direct threat to our country, the whole business of the Japanese wanting to take Papua New Guinea, because if they had... they'd still debate whether we would have been invaded because I don't think the Japanese had the capability to actually invade.
Well, they're only going to invade
Australia.
Us in Darwin, weren't they?
Even then, that would have been hard. And then what would they have done once they'd got here? All they had to do was isolate the country by controlling the sea lanes.
What else do people do in Darwin besides go and get pissed at a bar?
That's true. Well, that's what would have stopped them. The Japanese would have arrived and gone, go and have a nap on the lawn here, and then that would have been it, really. Mm. One would have hoped. But it was a very important battle, and yes, we have sort of tended to completely underrate it because no one else was involved. But that's why it's so interesting, because it was really just us for 6 weeks, and then the Americans got into the game and everything changed. But this is before that, and it's when we truly stood alone, David and Goliath, during this 44
days. And did we win the battle?
Well, it was fought to a kind of a standstill. It couldn't be won. It was an air engagement in which we fought superbly against far more superior aeroplanes and far more superior and more experienced pilots, but we took a great number of them down and showed the Japanese that it's not going to be a walkover.
Correct. We don't take us on if you don't think you know how to beat us.
That's it.
Look, congratulations on the book. People can buy it at all good bookstores, I'm assuming.
Even some of the crappy ones.
Even some of the crappy ones. It's called 44 Days. It's written by Michael Veitch.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.